We're continuing our discussion of tzedakah this week. So last week we went through the basics of tzedakah, and this week we're going to try to understand a little more in depth the concept of tzedakah. So one thing we didn't finish the Rambam's discussion of tzedakah last week. We started it, but we didn't get to finish his entire discussion. So I'm going to first finish the Rambam discussing tzedakah, and then I want to discuss a few other important points about tzedakah. So now we're going into chapter 10 of the Rambam's book, Hilchos Matnos Aniyim, the Laws of Gifts to the Poor. And this is the final chapter where he discusses tzedakah. So he says that a person should be careful with tzedakah more so than any other positive command in the Torah. I mean, that's a pretty powerful statement. He thinks tzedakah is so important that of all positive commandments the Torah gives us, tzedakah is the one we should be most careful with. Yeah, he'll mention that also. He says that tzedakah is a symbol that a person comes from the Avos, the patriarchs. Because we know that Abraham excelled in tzedakah. It says, the Manasher Tzaves Banav Laso Tzedakah, the Pasuk says, that I have commanded you that your children shall do tzedakah. So Abraham...
Tzedakah doesn't really mean money necessarily. It means the right thing.
Correct, but you're right, but the Rambam is taking that word and he's applying it to money as well. He's doing that. Yeah, he is.
It says,
Ki Yedativ... L'man asher yitzaves banav lasos tzedakah.
What
is parashat lech lecha? I don't know the... I think it's in Vayera, actually. Vayera.
Vayera?
I think so. But I don't have here the exact source. Vayera, right? Vayera. But we see that Avraham excelled in tzedakah. And Hashem commanded Avraham he should pass on this trait to his children. Then he says the standing, or as he calls it, the throne of the Jewish people is only established, and the true religion only stands through tzedakah. As it says, b'tzedakah techonini, that I become established through tzedakah. And then it says that the Jewish people are only redeemed by merit of tzedakah. As it says, tzion b'mishpat yipadeh, that Zion is redeemed through justice, v'shaveha, and its captive people will be brought back through tzedakah. So the Rambam, you know, he brings many sources about the value and importance of the mitzvah of tzedakah. And he then says, a person will never become poor through their giving of tzedakah. If you give tzedakah appropriately, then that's not going to make you poor yourself. And again, that means within the realm of halacha, meaning if you're being reckless with your money, then I don't know if this guarantee would apply. But if you're doing as the Torah tells us to do and giving the right amounts as the Torah commands, I mean, we discussed last week what the limits are and what the guidelines actually are. As long as you're going within the Torah's guidelines, do not fear that it's going to make you poor. You'll be just fine by giving tzedakah. Nothing bad will happen to a person, he says, through tzedakah. And the Pasuk says, it says in a verse, V'hayah masa tzedakah shalom, that an act of tzedakah creates shalom, peace. And then it says, the Rambam writes, if you show compassion to others, God shows compassion to you. If you are cruel and don't show compassion to others, he says a very interesting thing. He says we should check into your lineage. Are you really Jewish? That's what he says. Jews are compassionate. Jews have it from... Exactly, right. Jews have it from, you know, from the Avos, the Imos, the Patriarchs, and Matriarchs, the concept of compassion, care, mercy. And a Jew who's acting cruel, he says, check if they're really Jewish. Maybe there's something in the lineage which is off, because Jews are compassionate people. Because that we find cruelty amongst Gentiles, but not among, we shouldn't find it amongst Jews. And then he says that any person who is Jewish, and all those who accompany them, they're referred to as children of God. And how can we not have compassion on God's children? We're all brethren. We're brothers and sisters to one another. So if we're all family, we're all one big family, we're all God's children, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, obviously we need to have compassion on one another. And then he says that, to whom do the poor of the Jewish people raise their eyes towards? Who are they looking towards for their support? They don't look towards the Gentiles, they look towards their brethren. So we are responsible for our Jewish brothers and sisters to make sure that they're supported. Next point the Rambam makes, he says that if you hide your eyes from tzedakah, you are called somebody, the word used is bli'al. Bli'al means somebody who's kind of rebellious, somebody who's kind of, you know, off the beaten path. So you can't hide your eyes from tzedakah. And then we find that the word Belial is also used in reference to somebody who is a pagan, idolatrous. That's how severe that sin can be. And a person who ignores tzedakah is called a chote, a sinner. But it says that God is very close to the cries of the poor. If somebody is needy and poor and calls out to God, God listens to those cries and God responds. And therefore, if they're calling out because we are being cruel, we are not showing compassion, so then those cries are heard and God will take them out upon us. God forbid. Therefore, we have to be very careful if we hear people who are poor, impoverished, who are needy and crying out. We have to be very careful to listen to their pleas and help them out. So that's that discussion. So again, he's showing how important this mitzvah actually is. Yes?
If I give tzedakah to Israel each year, am I mandated to give tzedakah in the U.S.?
So we mentioned last week there's an order of priorities. You know, essentially you start family and your local city comes first. And besides that, even if you give a certain amount of tzedakah yearly, if you're asked, you know, face to face, I need something, you have to give something. We mentioned that last week as well. So you're never absolved from that request face to face. You can give a quarter, you can give a 50 cents, but you have to give something when you're asked face to face. If you give tzedakah with a sefer panim ra'os, you know, with a mean attitude, you know, with a mean look on your face. So in that situation, then even if you're giving $1,000, you've lost your merit of the mitzvah because the person feels like trash they're giving it to. So you might be giving them money, but if you look at them askance, you look down at them, and you're destroying their dignity as you're giving their tzedakah, that's a terrible thing. Rather, you're supposed to give tzedakah b'sefer panim yafos, with a very kind and friendly countenance, uvesimcha, with joy. You should give tzedakah with joy, and you should feel the burden of the person's pain. You should sympathize with the person. And he quotes some sources for this, and speak to the person words of support and care. And that's how you give tzedakah. So if someone asks you for tzedakah, somebody comes to your door and asks for a handout, so you don't have to give much. Again, you can assess your own finances, what to give to the person. But more important sometimes than the sum of money is the smile, is the best wishes. I wish you best of luck, hatzlacha rabba, whatever you tell them, you know, everything should go well. But that smile and that compassion to them often is more meaningful than the extra $20 you could have given. You know, so again, if it's $10,000 versus $10, maybe it makes a difference. You know, but for them, the actual attitude in giving is very, very meaningful, because it's very hard to ask for money. And the person's already down and out. The fact they're going and asking for money means that they're down and they're needy. And to make them feel even more down and more needy, that's a terrible thing. But to at least give them some words of encouragement and support, even if you can't afford to give much money, that's very significant. The Rambam then says, if the person asks you for money and you don't have anything to give, now let's say you don't have any money to give. Let's say you're out in the streets, you don't have your wallet with you, and someone approaches you, I need some money. So what do? You can't give money, but at least give some words of encouragement in that case. You say, I'm so sorry I don't have any money, but I wish you best of luck. You know, I'm so sorry that you're down, you know, etc. But you give them some words of encouragement. That's also tzedakah. You should not ever yell or insult somebody who's poor. You shouldn't raise your voice at them, because the person is already nishbar v'nidke, downtrodden and depressed. And we know, leave nishbar v'nidke l'kim l'sivzeh. It says that the heart, which is depressed and downtrodden, Hashem does not turn away. So Hashem has a special care for this person. And therefore, our job is to encourage them. And he says, oy, you know, oy vavoy, woe is to the one who embarrasses somebody who's poor. Rather, you should be ba'av ben harachamim ben hadbedvarim. You should be to him like a father, with your mercy and with your words. Like Hashem is, avinuchi le'avion. Hashem says, I am the father to all those that are destitute and poor. And that's our role as well, to emulate Hashem and try to act in that way with compassion and with care. Then he says, if you can encourage others to give tzedakah, that's even a greater mitzvah than giving yourself. Chazal teach us, the rabbis say, Gadol ha-ma'asa yosar mina osa. If you're able to cause a good deed to occur, that's greater than you doing it yourself, because you're bringing others into the program. And that's an amazing thing. So somebody's able to collect for a cause, and to encourage others to give to a cause, that on some level is a greater mitzvah than giving your own money to tzedakah. And that's also a piece of advice for us. If we can't afford to give much, But we can always call a friend and say, are you able to help? You know, we're able to, we can at least rally the troops around the cause, if there's a cause to be rallied upon. So the Rambam says, if you're able to encourage others to give tzedakah, you have an incredible amount of reward in heaven. And he says, and somebody who serves as a gabbai tzedakah, who serves as a tzedakah collector in a city, the person who volunteers for that job, also has tremendous merit. So that's all the Rambam, he's showing us the importance and the value of this mitzvah. And now he goes into a very famous list of the 8 different levels of tzedakah. Maybe you've heard this before. The Rambam is very famous for this list. And the Rambam is able to clearly define for us 8 ways of giving and what's better than the other. So let's talk about the 8 ways of giving tzedakah. So the greatest way to give tzedakah, and you know this is famous both you know in Jewish thought and in non-Jewish thought, the whole idea of give man a fish, eats for a day, teach him to fish, eats forever. Now, to be able to give somebody the ability to make a livelihood. Somebody who is down and out because they can't get a job. Maybe they need training. Maybe they need a skill. Maybe you have connections. You can find them a job. Because much better than giving handouts is to be able to support yourself independently. So the greatest level of tzedakah is what we call machzik yad yisrael. If you're able to support someone in a way which they can now pick themselves up and have an income on a consistent basis. And that's a very important thing. So if you have connections, or you have a skill, or you have a business, or you know some of the business, or you can train them or help them, you know, get training, that itself is considered the highest level of tzedakah. That's not always relevant or practical, but if that's a possibility, that's the best thing you can do. And Rambam also explains that if you can give the person, let's say, a loan to help them start a business, well, that would also fall into this category. Or you can make a partnership with them. And he could take on a big burden of your business, but that'll at least get the person on their feet so they can make their own money. And that's an incredible... So we think of tzedakah as giving money. This is even greater than that. This is allowing the person to become independent. That's an amazing thing. So that's the very first level, the highest level of tzedakah. The Rambam then says, the next level is that you give anonymously, and the recipient doesn't know who gave them either. I mean, you don't know who you're giving, and they don't know who's giving them. Because part of tzedakah, you know, the person feels ashamed. But from both ends. Right,
from both ends.
Yeah, they don't know who's giving them, you don't know who you're giving either.
Oh, really?
That's the next highest level.
Well, like we give money here to people who need buying food for Shabbos. We don't know who are they do give.
Right, yeah, you don't...
Yeah.
So like, for instance, because somebody's asking for money, it's embarrassing, you know, they're admitting to the fact that I can't make it on my own. So if you know who you're giving it to, you might look down upon them. You might feel a little bit arrogant, yeah, I'm supporting this guy. And if he knows who's giving to him, then he's going to feel ashamed when they see you. Whether you know you gave to them or not, when they see you, they're going to feel a little bit uncomfortable, a little funny, a little anxious. So the next greatest level of tzedakah is to give anonymously and have it that the recipient doesn't know who you are. And you don't know who the recipient is.
I think this is the highest one.
It's the highest one.
I would say right. This is the highest.
Well, this is the highest when it comes to handouts.
Because you are not interested in it, you know. It's really completely unselfish.
Right, that's true.
It doesn't come back to you.
I guess if you can get somebody a job anonymously, that'd be the best one. Because the Rama is saying the best thing is when you can make him independent, right? But I guess if you can make someone independent and they don't know you did it for them, that'd probably be, I guess, if you combine the two, that'd be the highest level. Yeah, right. The next level down, this is the third highest level of tzedakah. This would be that you know to whom you are giving, but they don't know who's giving them. So sometimes some might say, I'm collecting for this person, neighbor of mine, you know them. You know, his name is Joe Schwartz, right? So, I know Joe Schwartz. I like him a lot. I'll give to the fund. So Joe Schwartz does not know who's giving into his fund, but you know you're giving to him. So for him, he's not ashamed to see you because he doesn't know you gave him any money. You know you gave to him, so you might look a little bit down, a little bit funny at him, so it's not the ideal. But yet, from his perspective, you know, he feels very comfortable with you, and that's the next level of tzedakah. So that's the third level. Then the Rambam says the next level, that would be, you know... That the person who's receiving knows from who he got the money, but you don't know who you're giving to. The opposite of that one. So you give into a fund, and somebody delivers the money to the person who is needy, and he knows exactly who gave into this fund, but you don't know where the money went. So there, in that case, though, he might feel a little ashamed seeing you, encountering you, but you don't know who you give money to, so you don't feel that way when you see him. So that'd be the next level down. And again, in each one has its times and place. I mean, it's not that you can't always choose how to give tzedakah. Sometimes you know the person's needy and you want to give to them. You can't hide from the person because you know who they are. And sometimes they won't accept your money unless you say, here I am, this is me, and I want to give you the money. So many times you have to reveal your identity, you have to know their identity. But you know, in all things equal, in a situation where you can, it's best to remain anonymous. The next level, the Rambam says, is even if he knows who you are, and you know who he is, if you're able to give before he has to ask you, that's the next level down. So because, again, asking is difficult. Asking can be embarrassing. Asking can take a shot at his own self-esteem or dignity. So if you just sense the need, and the person doesn't have to ask you, that's another higher level of tzedakah. And then you're saving that person the embarrassment of having to ask for handouts. And we mentioned last week how sometimes you're able to set it up that even though you know tzedakah, he feels it's something else. Whether it be a long-term loan, whether it be a present. So your goal in your mind is tzedakah, but you didn't make the person receive tzedakah in his own mind or ask for tzedakah. You give it to him in some other way. You can be clever. You plan out how to give tzedakah properly. So that's the next level. The next level down would be that you give after the person has to ask you, but you give the proper amount. So now we're talking numbers at this point. So the person came to ask you, and they had to go through that shame. But when they ask, you're very generous, and you give what the person really needs, or what you can afford, but you give what you're supposed to give. The next level down would be that you give less than you should give, but at least you do it happily. You know, with a smile, with words of encouragement, like we said before. And the lowest level of tzedakah is that you give, but you give, you know, with a bad attitude. You give looking at the person askance and negatively. That's the lowest level. So it's still stuck, and the person still can use the money and buy food and pay their rent, etc. But in that giving of tzedakah, you have, instead of feeling, making the person feel supported and feel encouraged, the person now feels even more down and out emotionally. That's the lowest level. So it's still tzedakah, and the person still receives the money, and they can still spend the money. But that's the lowest level. So those are Rambam's eight levels of tzedakah. Yeah. No.
Why?
It's not. Why? Maybe let's talk about it afterwards. That's a good question, but I don't want to get off topic. But it's not. Rambam continues after this discussion. He says that there is a common custom to this very day that people will give a little tzedakah right before davening. And the reason is, it says, there's a verse quoted, I believe it's in Tehillim and Psalms, it says, Ani betzedek echze panecha. I shall see you with tzedek, which we'll translate as with tzedakah. So there's a concept of giving tzedakah before you pray, and that's a certain merit that we're going to be able to encounter God and have a really deep and meaningful conversation through the merit of tzedakah. So Rambam cites this.
So we give something by giving something, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's very self-interest. We do that because of what we get something from it.
That's okay sometimes also, right? You're right, that's true. But that's also okay sometimes. But there's a certain merit of tzedakah which helps with tefillah. It helps with tefillah. So then this is a common custom. Even if you look in your siddur, there's certain places where some siddurim say it's a custom to give tzedakah at this point. And many people will go over and put something into the tzedakah box prior to davening, and it's a common custom. And the Rambam quotes it over here. Then he says, you know, this is interesting, especially for in modern days we can imagine not doing this. But the Rambam says, if you feed your adult children, that you're not obligated to feed according to the strict halacha, that's also considered tzedakah. So, I mean, halachically, I mean, there is a cutoff point as to how old the child has to be that you have an obligation to feed them. You know, in our world, I mean, children are dependent until who knows when, 20, 22, 24, whatever the age may be, 30, you know, whatever.
Endless.
I mean, that's only a recent phenomenon, but, you know, it used to be that, you know, children of the age 10, 11, 12 were already working sometimes in poor families, and if not that, 16, 18, and they'd be independent in some way. So whatever the numbers may be, but if you're feeding adult children, which could be over the age of 12 or 13, bar and bas mitzvah, and you have an obligation to halachically, that's also tzedakah. Then it's also supporting parents in their old age who need support. That's tzedakah as well. That certainly qualifies as tzedakah. And the tzedakah, we said, to relatives is considered a priority over to others. So therefore, if there is someone in your family who is needy, that should be a priority. And then he says, if you go ahead and you feed and give food and drink to people who are poor or to orphans and you invite them to your table, so this person gets a special reward. It says the person will call to Hashem and Hashem will answer his prayers. And he will achieve a certain level of delight and pleasure in this world. As it says, Az tikrav Hashem yana, you shall call out and Hashem will listen. So there's a special merit one gets in inviting the poor to their table. Then it says the rabbis, the sages, commanded us that we should regularly, when we don't need to hire somebody. So if you could choose between somebody who is well-to-do and somebody who is poor, hire the person who is poor. All things equal, obviously. If all things equal, there is certainly a halachic concept to hire the person who is needy so you can support them. It's much better to have those who work for you being those who are needy than those who are not, etc. And then he says, as much as we stress the importance of tzedakah, a person should not push themselves too hard to avoid taking tzedakah, meaning that taking tzedakah obviously is not an ideal, but how much are you personally needing to suffer before you ask for tzedakah? Zerama says, you don't have to push yourself and, you know, be in pain and suffering and not ask for tzedakah. I mean, at a certain point, you're allowed to ask for tzedakah. You should do your best in order to avoid taking. And if you have things you can cut, you know, and you can budget things out and live a simpler lifestyle, you certainly should. Even to the extent, you know, we have a concept of having three meals on Shabbos. But the Gemara says, if someone who is poor, can have two meals on Shabbos. Because the third meal, that you can argue, is considered a luxury when it comes to somebody who can't afford it. And therefore, that third meal, they can forego. Even though halachas of Shabbos mandate three meals. So he talks about that there is a concept of foregoing on things that are luxuries and pleasures, certainly to avoid taking tzedakah, which is obvious in our eyes as well. But there's a concept that one should do that. You know, we should push ourselves as much as we can, but not deprive ourselves and pain ourselves. There's no mitzvah to starve to avoid taking tzedakah. But yet, you should push yourself as much as you can to avoid having to ask for handouts. And certainly, this is another important point that many of us miss sometimes. If you're forced to take a job which is less than pleasant for you, take it. You know, it's much more important you take any job and make a clean, honest living rather than ask for money. So the example given, he's quoting from the Gemara, it's much better to have to sit there skinning animals in the marketplace. And don't say, well, it's beneath me, you know, I don't like touching dirty and grimy animals. But if that's what it takes to make a parnasa, to make a living, that's what you have to do. Yeah.
Last week we said that there's an obligation to allow people to live at the lifestyle that they were accustomed to if they lost all their...
Right.
So if they were CEO, right, they lost their job, the house of cards came tumbling down.
Right.
For them to pick up, you know, trash.
Right.
Wouldn't they see themselves? I thought we weren't allowed.
So that's a good question.
Israel, it happens a lot. You have people coming from other countries.
I just want to know the difference, though.
So the difference is that one is speaking to the giver, and one is speaking to the receiver. Right. Speaking to the giver, you have to give the person's needs. The person says, "I need my luxurious lifestyle." No, we can't question them. That's their need, and we're supposed to give them, you know, again, with priorities in mind. But from the person's, the recipient's perspective, they shouldn't make that request. They should, the recipient should say, I don't want to ask for tzedakah. I'd rather get a menial job and reduce my standard of living in order to be independent. That's their business. Our business as givers is to give to their needs. So you have to look at it from two different angles. That's the difference.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi.
And it's, I'm right, so even the greatest of sages, many of them were employed as wood choppers and people who would schlep around beams and water carriers and blacksmiths, even though these are dirty jobs or difficult jobs. But they did that rather than ask for tzedakah because they didn't want to ask for tzedakah. Then the final point that Rama makes, this is the last point he makes in the entire discussion, he says, anybody who does not need tzedakah and cons other people into giving tzedakah, that person will not die until they actually are needy. Meaning that the punishment will be mita keneged mita. If you're asking for tzedakah and we don't need it, then believe you me, you will need the tzedakah in the future. That's what the Rambam says. And that person is considered cursed. As it says, Arur hagever sher yiftach ba'adam. Cursed is the one who trusts in man and not in God.
Al tiftachu
ben divim. Right, correct. V'chol mish tzarech litol. And anybody who needs tzedakah and can't live without it, and doesn't take, that's also considered, he's a shofech damim, like you're a murderer, you're murdering yourself. Meaning if somebody, God forbid, a situation where they need the tzedakah and they can't live without it, and instead of asking for tzedakah, they sit there, not just reducing their standard of living, but suffering, and living a wretched lifestyle they can't handle. So that's considered also inappropriate. If you get to the point you need tzedakah, you're supposed to ask for it. That's why the Torah set up the system that way. And it says if you're at that point, you're elderly, can't pay your bills, you're sickly, you're going through a lot of pain and suffering, but you say, how can I bear to ask for tzedakah? And rather you sit there and you suffer. He says this person is shofech damim. It's like you're murdering yourself. And in lo batzara l'chatos v'shamus, and that suffering is not a mitzvah, it's a sin. So that's not considered a righteous act when you get to that point. Again, there's standards, but it's not considered a righteous act to suffer through it. If you're not suffering, if you're sort of reducing, okay, I get a smaller house, and I'll eat more simply, and I'll wear simple clothes, that's considered a laudable and praiseworthy action. But to suffer, or make your family suffer because of it, and that's considered a sin. And then if he says, anybody who needs to take, but he pushes himself, is able to live, he lives a simple lifestyle, that person will succeed. And he says that person eventually will be able to even grow their own assets. As Yafaris, they'll be able to give tzedakah themselves, so they'll be rewarded for it. And about that it says, Baruch HaGever Sheyitach B'Hashem, blessed is the person who trusts in God. So there are levels. You know, if somebody is needy, but can make it, so it's considered praiseworthy that they should push themselves and make it by on a very simple standard of living. If somebody is really suffering, but is too, quote-unquote, dignified to ask for money, that's considered a terrible decision and considered a damaging action. So that's the end of the Rambam's discussion of tzedakah.
Yes? So
last week we mentioned that there is a concept to give to non-Jews as well, called Darkei Shalom. But because of Darkei Shalom, we want to make sure that there's peace in the, you know, if we were giving out tzedakah to Jews, non-Jew came by and said, I'm not giving it to you, what would be the reaction? Obviously, it would be very negative. So we do have a concept of supporting non-Jews as well. That's the Rambam said it, we quoted it last week.
So what is
Lotechanem? That's an interesting question. Lotechanem is when you're just giving out gifts for no reason. I mean, Darkei Shalom is different than Lotechanem. Lotechanem is that I don't have any particular reason, but I'm just trying to give and give and give to Gentiles.
For example, if I have a cleaning lady and I find that she asked less than I thought she deserves,
right,
I'm not allowed to give a few more dollars. This is lot of name.
It's a good question. Gentile. Ask your rabbi. Good question.
Yeah.
I mean, you could also argue that's for your benefit as well, because she'll be happy working for you and she'll do a good job if you treat her nicely.
Yeah,
so
she will respect
loyalty.
Right.
Loyalty.
So, yeah. So you could argue that's for your benefit too. It's not lutechanem. But again, that you can ask your rabbi that question. Yeah. I mean, it's like chinam. It's like giving away, free gifts, free presents, things like that.
Going back to the question of the person who's accustomed to a high lifestyle and says, "I need it," so he goes to a person of very modest means and says, "I need." Is the person of modest means required to support him at a level higher than himself?
So within. There's levels of priorities, you know?
All the priorities, right?
Right. So, again, if you have no one else to give tzedakah to,
yeah,
and he comes to your door, you'd have to give him. You know, that's considered a valid request. Should he make the request, we would say not. But once he made the request, he feels he needs it, then yeah, that's your mitzvah. There's still mitzvah tzedakah in that. Again, assuming everybody who can't pay their rent and can't eat dinner is taken care of. You know, so then,
yeah.
But if it's a valid tzedakah need, that's considered a valid tzedakah need. For you, it's not a need. You're living a more basic lifestyle. You don't need that lifestyle. It's not a need for you. But for him, it's really a need. It's really a need. So therefore, there was a mitzvah to give. So I want to add just a few extra points about tzedakah, a few deeper points. These are both points made in different Hasidic works, you know, more conceptual points. But number one, you know, tzedakah we view very much as a mitzvah between us and our fellow human being. They need money, they need support, they're needy, we support them. But one Hasidic Rebbe, Nesiv HaShalom, the Slonim Rebbe, so he writes in his book, he says that really tzedakah is an expression of amunah, of our faith in God. It's, you know, it goes much deeper than just giving out money to others. And why is that? Because we have to realize that all money that we have is really from God. It says in Pirkei Avos, ten lo mishalo, you should give to him of his own, she'atav ha'shechashlo, because you and yours belongs to him. I mean, the money we have belongs to God. And essentially, when we give tzedakah, we're just taking God's money and we're spreading it around. We're giving it back to God once again.
That's why communism comes from a Jew, right? Karl Marx.
The what?
Communism.
A communism.
Karl Marx.
It's an interesting connection to me. It says, there's a pasuk in Tanakh, it says, Kimimcha hakol, umyadcha nesanu lach. From you comes all, and from your hand we give back to you. So there's a recognition in tzedakah that all of our possessions, the money that we've made in life, really is not ours. It came to us because Hashem, in His kindness, has endowed us with this money and given us we put forth the work. But ultimately, not everyone who works makes money. Not everyone's able to make that parnassa, to make a living. And those who do have to realize that the living they make is a gift from God. And that money really is God's money put into our possession. He trusts us with it. It's like a trust fund. You know, it's a deposit in our bank accounts from God. And He says, this is my money. I'm letting you have it. But you have to use it as I dictate. So some of it is used, you know, for your own needs. You can, you know, pay your mortgage, and you can, you know, have dinner, and you can do what you need to do with it. But there's certain conditions in this money. And some of the conditions are that you have to give to those who are needy, those who are poor. Those are the conditions. This is my money. I'm telling you what to do with it. This is your fund. So it's not our money to do what we want to do with. It's God's money. If we lose our money, so we'll say it was not a big deal. It wasn't mine anyways, right? And if we make a lot of money, we say, oh, God gave me more money to distribute. That should be the attitude. But essentially, the money we have is distributing God's money. He's entrusted us with His funds to use appropriately. So therefore, the emunah, the faith in God that comes from tzedakah, is to recognize that this is not my money. That God controls the world. God controls my income. And therefore, giving tzedakah shouldn't be all that hard for us. I mean, what makes tzedakah so hard is that this is my hard-earned money. I worked, I struggled, I have bills to pay also, and you want to take my money, right? But if our attitude is, no, it's not my money, God has entrusted me with this money, and He said, use some of it for yourself, and give some of it away, okay, that's what I got to do, because it's not my money. I don't want to be a thief, you know, I don't want to steal God's money, and He only gave me the money with these conditions. The Torah says, v'zacharta, you should remember, ki Hashem l'kecha hu anosin l'chakoch l'asos chayol, that's Hashem, your God, who gave you the ability to produce all this wealth. Because or else we fall into the trap of the other pasuk that says a person might say it's kochi v'otzim yadi, it's my strength, and it's my power that made me all this wealth. Those two verses stand in contrast to one another. We should never say it was my strength and my talents that made the wealth. We should say that God gave you that strength, God gave you those talents, and the wealth came because of His blessing towards you. With that attitude, so again, that helps us grow in emunah, in our faith in God, because we recognize that all that we have comes from Him. It also makes tzedakah much easier, because when I'm giving it away, you know, some people have the job that they work for charitable organizations and distribute funds. You know, the people who do that for a living, and it's not hard to give the money away because it's not my money. You know, there's a multi-billionaire who sets up a fund, and he hired me to analyze all the causes that come to his door and work out who deserves the money. So when I write the check, it's not money anyways, so it's not difficult for me to do. That's what I'm supposed to do. That's my job. If I don't do it, I'll get fired. You know. So that's what we should be the money that we have. When we're giving it tzedakah, God gave us, you know, He gave us the rules. He told us how to do it, what percentages He requires us to give, how we're supposed to give. And when we do it, so I'm just giving out His money. That's all I'm doing. Now, I always suggest that it's very, very beneficial to take your tzedakah money and put it into a separate bank account. I do this myself. Because if it's a different account, you've already basically said, this is not my money anymore. So when you're writing that tzedakah check, it's not from your money, it's from the other bank account. So therefore, it's much easier. if it's all in your bank account, so you're looking at the numbers, and you see the numbers going down and down and down, this is my money I'm giving away. But if you designate a separate bank account for your stucco money, it makes it 1,000 times easier to give. Experience will tell you that. So that's definitely, and it's not hard to do. The banks do it for free. It's not a big deal, but it's a piece of advice. It makes stucco much easier. And it's really this point that because the money is not really mine in the first place. This was God's money. So this is God's bank account over here. He let me keep this bank account for me. And the second account is God's account.
May I ask you a question? Bli ayin hara, you have a big family, and you need to pay tuition. You still don't think that it's kind of maser, the tuition?
That's a very good question. There's a lot of discussion if tuition counts in maaser.
Yeah.
Different rabbis say different things about
if
that.
If I give to my children to sit and learn,
yeah,
can I look at it as a tzedakah?
That yes. You could. That you certainly could.
It's not a tuition.
Yeah, the question would be your own children's tuition would be the question. Supporting another child, for sure can give it from maaser, right? Whereas your own children, it could be that's an obligation you have, and therefore it's not tzedakah.
It's not?
Again, there's different approaches to it. The question would be that you definitely paying for a secular education is not called stucca for a child. Paying for the Torah learning is.
Torah learning.
Right. So the question is, this is a separate issue, but the question halachically would be, if I would have sent my kid to a public school, and now I have to pay tuition in a yeshiva, so then I can argue that the tuition is purely stucca. But if I would never, in my dream, send a kid to a public school, and my kids are for sure going to a yeshiva, then it could be that's just my obligation. It's not instead of something else. Again, this is a discussion, and many poskim say different ways on this point. But that's where the issue really comes up.
But
if it's a grandchild, that's not... Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. School tuition funds are certainly tzedakah. You know, grandchildren would be tzedakah for sure. Yeah, right, that's for sure.
Rabbi, I just wanted to mention, years ago, Yeshiva University had a dinner here, and the man who gave a lot of money got up to speak, and he started with, "I am God's treasurer."
There you go.
And
right.
That's how he started.
So he got it right.
His money, God's money.
He got it right.
Yeah.
He really got it right. And this one other final point, is that this is from the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya. So he writes that, when you give tzedakah, money is called, in one of the words for money in Hebrew is damim. Damim means blood, but also means money. So what's the connection between blood and money? And it happens to be the rabbis compare stealing to killing. If you steal someone's money, you've taken away part of their soul. That's one of the quotes you have in the Talmud. And the question is, why is money called blood? Why is stealing called, why is it compared to murdering? Like, what's the connection? But the answer is very simple. I guess the most basic answer is that money enables us to buy our needs of life. So if I take away someone's money and he can't afford food, then you have killed him. That's a simple answer.
What happens if you loan someone money and they don't pay it back?
So they have an obligation. You could take them to Beis Din for that. Yeah, if you want to forgo the money, that's your business. But they have an obligation according to the Torah to repay you, and if they don't, you can take them to Beis Din, and the Beis Din can enforce
and
it.
And they say they don't have the money.
It's a problem, but
if they don't have the money,
it's like anything else. But you can eventually, if there's a ruling of a Beis Din they owe you, then they can eventually go and confiscate for future funds and garner salaries, things like that. Like anything else. But the concept of money being blood, being like blood. So one idea is that we work very hard for our money. From the times of the original curse of Adam and Chava, we had to work by sweat of our brow to feed ourselves, to eat bread by the sweat of your brow. And you work hard for our money. Time, energy, efforts, that's how we make money. So really, the money is an expression of our souls, of our blood, sweat, and tears, What?
All the effort we put.
Yeah, the effort, it's all there, all the effort. The harder we work, the more money we make, and that's our blood and our sweat and our energy going into that money. So the money in our account, really contains within it our blood, our life force we put into making that money. That's what it is. If someone works honestly and works hard for a living and they make money, that money is a function and a result of their dam, of their blood.
But
yeah.
Also, if you consider the context, the time, at that time, they did not have work like all the services we have now, which are not very hard physically.
right.
That type of work was very hard physical.
Physical work, right, yeah.
So that might be the context of it.
Right, that's for sure. But yeah, but even if it's not physical work, it's still time and effort and focus. And it takes a lot out of a person. You know, person comes home from work, they're exhausted. That's typical. Giving away our money is giving away part of ourselves. That's what it is. The money really is part of ourselves. Not materialistic, but because we put ourselves into it. So it's not an inappropriate emotion to say, giving away my money, it's giving away part of myself. I'm not being too materialistic and too focused on wealth. It's, I really put a lot of effort into making this money. And it's not easy to part with it. So the Baal Tanya writes, the first of Babaji Rebbe, he writes that it's considered a real act of self-sacrifice to give tzedakah. I'm sacrificing of myself. I'm giving all my time and energy I put into making the money, I'm just giving away, right? A person works, you know, for a week and makes a salary, and then they give all that money away, so that whole week was just given away. It's giving a part of themselves. So when you give tzedakah, besides helping out the person receiving it, it's an act of mesiras nefesh, self-sacrifice towards God. That's what it is. I'm sacrificing of myself for this mitzvah. More so than my other mitzvahs. Other mitzvahs, so I do the action, and it's over. But tzedakah, the money is a result of a lot of time and effort and energy, which I put in, and that should be my money, and then I just give it out because God said so. So that's considered a real act of self-sacrifice, mesiras nefesh, and that's why it's such a tremendous merit on our behalf in God's book. So I'm sacrificing what I could have done with the money, that's one point, but beyond that, I'm sacrificing my own blood and efforts that I made the money with to give away and help the person who's poor. So, and ultimately, the rabbis teach us that more than the donor does to the recipient does for the owner, for the donor. Because they're training us to be people who are generous, people who are giving, people who are willing to self-sacrifice on behalf of others.
Without hoping something in return.
Nothing in return. Right, nothing in return. So we have to recognize, number one, that in tzedakah, it's not just for the recipient, but God is training us to be generous people, compassionate people. We're learning how to have a deeper faith in God. We're learning responsibility. We're learning all sorts of things. And we're becoming less materialistic by giving away our money. And we're self-sacrificing ourselves for God.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.